you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome to the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your host, Mickey Desai. My guest today is Sabrina Walker Hernandez. Sabrina is the president of Supporting World Hope, a nonprofit professional, expert on many things in the nonprofit world. And we're going to be talking about a few things related to nonprofit health, success, and sustainability. Isn't that right, Sabrina?
That is correct. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm glad we get to do this. How do we get the ball rolling? I don't want to steal your thunder, so please move us in the right direction.
You know, I think when we talk about nonprofits, health, success, and sustainability, I think that, I use this principle in my head. I see a pyramid, right? Mm-hmm. And at the base of that pyramid is a great board of directors.
Yes.
And then you have to have a great board of directors, right? I think a lot of times, especially with new nonprofits and startup nonprofits, they go into it with what I call the Bubba theory. And the Bubba theory is when you have your mother, brother, cousin on the board, right? That's the Bubba theory.
Sabrina, are you from the South?
I am.
Yes.
Can you tell?
Bubba. I knew we were going to get along for a reason. I agree. I mean, I'm sitting here nodding my head violently. No one can see this, but I'm like, thank you. Yes, the secret, the foundation always starts from the board. And it is sort of a habit for people who are not used to this to start their nonprofits and just simply recruit the people they know.
Yes. And
that could be a huge mistake. But anyway, I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, we're on the same page. It is a huge mistake. And I tell people to look at it like this. Your board is your force multiplier.
Yeah.
And so if you go and you get people, if you go get your mother, brother, cousin, they know the same exact people that you know. So you're not expanding your circle. And the whole goal of your board is to expand your circle. I call it force multiplier. So you want to get outside of your circle. So that's why you need to be strategic and you need to have someone, let's say, from the medical field that can get your nonprofit into that circle, the legal field, maybe someone from the financial field. It depends on what your mission is. If your mission is like workforce related, then you need to be reaching out to the entities that are in that workforce, maybe some economic development. If it's, I have a nonprofit that is burn victim related. So they should be reaching out to the medical field and to, you know, that's what's going to advance their organization. And so it's being strategic like that and figuring out and putting that foundation in place and understanding that your board is your force multiplier, and they're going to open the door to whatever industry that they're there on your board representing so that you can move your nonprofit mission forward. And if you look at it that way, I think I hope that becomes an aha moment for people because they struggle. And what they're struggling with is a lot of times they say they're struggling with fundraising, which is the other side of that pyramid. But if they don't have that base right, the fundraising is not going to come.
So let's talk about that for a second. You alluded to something called an aha moment, which I think we should get to. But you know, if I'm starting a nonprofit, certainly the notion that I should be strategic in finding people for my board related to industry, related to connections, related to even access to resources. Why do people struggle with that? It's the foundation, like you're saying. So what is it that holds people back from cultivating the board that they need?
I think a lot of times, I will say with startup nonprofits, it's just the lack of being aware. And even when they become aware, I had someone tell me, no, I want it like this because I want to be able to control it. So you have those that have that founder mentality.
Yeah.
And they get that shock that there's no owner of a nonprofit, right? And it's your board is it. And yes, even if you found the nonprofit, your board can terminate you.
Yeah.
And they get that shock of that. And so they try to control who is on the board so they can control, you know, whether they leave, stay, go, what have you. But you can still control that and have quality board members. And I guess control that might be the wrong phrase, but you can still have influence over that. I worked for my organization for 20 years. And as when you do your job very well, your board will respect you and they will value your input. And when we search for board members, I had the power of veto.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was somebody that I like, for whatever reason, I know something about this person, I don't want this person, my board respected me enough to embrace that, to you know, have my opinion qualify. So you can still you can still have influence over the process, let me say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and you touched on something which I think is very important. Setting up your board with the right people is only one piece of the puzzle. You have to pay attention to fit. You have to pay attention to culture, and you have to pay attention to those interpersonal relationships, because you're right. I mean, the nonprofit does not belong to anybody. And as much as any executive director, as much as any founding executive director wants to be, you know, involved and consider that nonprofit their little baby, the reality is your board of directors has complete governing authority. And if they say you want to go, if they say the organization should go left and you want to go straight, then you have to do what your board tells you to do.
Exactly. So,
but if you maintain those relationships and if you've set the culture correctly, then, you know, those conversations are much easier had. You're still part of the decision-making process, even if you don't have fiduciary responsibility that the board has.
Yes. So, yes. And I encourage people, and they always say, well, how do you do that? How do you make that culture? And I always say, look, it takes time. It's building relationships. I recommend people do this. Meet with your board. First of all, identify a great board chair.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Sometimes people become board chairs because nobody else wanted to do it. Not because they had the right skill set, not because they had, you know, they had the backbone to make the decisions and to be the gatekeeper of the board. So mm-hmm. hopefully identify the right board chair. But once that board chair is identified, go to lunch with them at least once a month so that you are building a relationship with them so that they can become your champion when decisions need to be made. And if the board chair is not the right person for that, then identify another board champion. But yeah. I always went to lunch at least once a month with my board chair. And there were some board members that I went to lunch with once a week, but mm-hmm. I made sure across the board, I had 21 board members. Let me start there.
Goodness, that's a large board.
That's a large board. I had 21 board members. And I made sure at least once a year that I connected with them on a personal level. And there's just some that I made sure that I connected with at least once a month or at least once a week. Yeah. And so you have to be strategic and you have to invest in those relationships. And a board is one of those relationships that you have to invest in.
Right. We're way off script here. Not that we actually have a script, but I think the thing you're talking about is simply trust, right? Pick people who have the right interest and the right professional backgrounds, but pick people that you trust, because the work that you do as a nonprofit executive, you cannot micromanage that. And in order to get away from micromanagement, you have to trust people to do the things they're supposed to do. Yes. Am I wrong? Is that right?
Okay. It starts with trust. It is. Uh-huh. It really is about trust. And you have to build that trust over time. It's like building relationships. And once you have that trust, you can move forward and setting that foundation. And then once you have that great foundation, which is the board, then you can bring, you know, fundraising will come, because if you have a good board and you educate that board and y'all are on the same page and the fundraising, they understand what the fundraising process is. And I always like to share what this process is, because mm-hmm. I think it makes it easier for people to swallow. Because fundraising, as soon as I say the word fundraising, people think of asking for money and that sure. big fear comes up. I tell people all the time, there's a formula, there's a process to fundraising. And 10% of fundraising is identifying potential donors. And that's where a good board comes in, helping you identify. Then the other 10% is qualifying. Okay, so you have a list of names, but that doesn't mean that those people are going to support you. Do they have the capacity to support you? Do they have the affinity towards your mission? You know, if your mission is animals and they're passionate about kids, then that's not going to align up. And then 60% of fundraising, which is where I love, and this is where you can really get your board involved, is cultivation, which is building relationships. If you have a great board as a foundation and they do cultivation very well, and cultivation means, you know, taking donors perhaps out to lunch, inviting them in for tours if you are a facility-based organization, picking up the phone and calling the donors, asking them, or potential donors, asking them for advice, engaging them at a special event. That's what your board can do around fundraising, because 60% of fundraising is building relationships. And then 5% of fundraising is asking. And we get so caught up in that fear of asking that we forget about everything else.
Yes.
And it's only 5%.
It's true. The ask is sort of at the tippy top of a pyramid that's all on its own. You know, there's so much that leads up to the ask, and so much churn, so much activity that gets filtered out. And the ask is like the last thing you do.
Yep. And then 15% is stewardship. You know, a lot of which stewardship is saying thank you. And your board members can be great at that part as well. And if we do the 60% right, which is to build in a relationship, everything that leads up to the ask, just like you said, and we do the 15% right, which is saying thank you, you are going to retain your donors. You are going to meet your fundraising goal, and you're going to engage your board in fundraising, because your board will feel very apt at calling someone to say, would you like to go to lunch? Or would you like to do a tour of the facility? Or picking up the phone and saying, thank you for your gift, or writing a thank you note. Those are all activities that are fundraising activities that we don't lend a lot of credence to. I think a lot of times people put too much emphasis on asking. Mm-hmm. They just do. And I think a board members should be present when the ask is made, but they're there to lend credibility. They're there to say, I am a volunteer with this organization. I feel passionate about this organization. I provide my time, my talent, and my treasure to this organization. And, you know, we're inviting you to come along on this journey. The CEO can say, will you consider a gift or an investment of $1,000 in our organization?
Right, right. I mean, it's almost as if it should be a social event. And I've positioned it that way to the you know, nonprofits I get to work with as well. It's not just the process of walking up to a person to say, hey, can we count on you to be a donor? But come on, you know, if that board member has become an integral part of your organization, if they're doing an evangelical job for the entity, you know, take me out for some barbecue and let's have a conversation, you know?
Yep.
And that's when the ask gets made by whoever is at the table, the staffer that's at the table.
Right.
And the ask isn't even that gratuitous either. It's just, it's not, hey, give me money. The ask has a certain feel to it, doesn't it?
Yes, I agree with you. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with the listeners.
Yeah.
You still get nervous. I still get nervous making the ask. But I understand, and I want people to understand, that's natural. But what you have to let yourself know is, I'm not asking for myself. I am not asking. In my case, I was in youth development. So I was not asking for Sabrina. I was asking on behalf of all those kids that needed service. And so when you go in with the right mindset and understand that you're not asking for yourself, you're asking on behalf of the clients that you serve, and you can do that. And I always followed a formula for the ask, which was, you know, again, will you consider an investment of, and put the amount in there. But I was always very specific with the ask, because sometimes if you're not, you have to be specific with the ask, because if you're not specific with the ask, you leave your donors confused. You really do. You can't say, well, whatever you can spare. That's a begging mentality. Mm-hmm. And that shows that you didn't prepare for the meeting, or you didn't cultivate very well, because you will understand if you cultivated very well and knew this donor at this point, you would know what they have given in the past to other organizations, what their ability is to give. So you should have a very specific amount involved. And I've lost donors, and this is a lesson, because we learn a lot from our failures.
Yes.
I've lost donors by not being specific. Sometimes people don't want to make decisions. And if you say whatever you feel comfortable with, you kind of leave them floundering. They don't know. And so instead of making a decision, they make no decision and you get nothing.
You get nothing. Exactly. But I like to try to do a little more intel than that, or at least, you know, through my board members or through what I observe of the person that I'm meeting with. When I sit down with that individual, I'd like to know a little bit more about them. And then there's that phrase that I'm sure you've heard over and over again in terms of content creation, marketing, know your audience, right? And just like you would tailor your message for your audience, you tailor the ask for the donor. And so if the donor is more likely to respond to a question like, hey, would you support our kids? Then that might help you frame the question. But if the donor is the kind of person who might say, hey, you might say to them, hey, would you join our team and be a supporter of this mission? You know, phrasing things a little bit differently might be the make or break difference. But to your point, I still think you need to get down to a question that has an articulated question mark at the end and expects an answer, right? So even if the answer has to be no, you have still asked the question, because you can't just float an idea and let it sit there. Otherwise, there's no real action. You know, give that person a reason to respond to you, even if that response is a very difficult to deliver message. So,
yeah, I agree with that. And I think sometimes people get discouraged when they hear no. And I just think no, you know, cliche, but no means the next opportunity, or no means not at this time, or no means I don't trust you just quite enough and you need to go back to cultivation and continue to build that relationship, or no means not this program. As you were saying, getting to know the donor and what resonates with them. Maybe they're really into literacy and you ask for support around STEM, you know? And so it's just that no means what did I miss? And let's try to refine it and go back to the table and learn about your donor a little bit more.
And they may not even be able to cut you a check. They may be able to open the door to the next person who can.
Yes.
So, but let me ask you this, Sabrina, just you and me and the internet. of all the asks you've ever made, how many of them were no, just in terms of a rough percentage ballpark?
Very low.
That's good.
And I will say this, and it is because I truly believe in building the relationships before making the ask. Mm-hmm. And when you build that relationship and you do it very well, and they know, you call and you say, I want to set up a meeting to talk about how you can further support our organization. If they say yes to that meeting, then 9 times out of 10, they're going to give you a gift.
Yeah. That's exactly right. If they say yes to the meeting, you're as good as, I mean, that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. But the reason I ask is the research I've done suggests that as many as 90% of the asks don't result in a check. And so I don't know if that is including like annual fund asks. But I took that number to heart, because that same number sort of works for corporate sales as well. Mm-hmm. If you go to bat 100 times and you strike out 90 of those times, that's still average. If all you do is hit a home run 10 times, according to this research, 10 times is still an A, right? It's still an A+.
Right.
And that makes sense.
Yeah. It does make sense, because it's a numbers game.
Exactly.
It's a numbers game. So, you know, the more ask that you make, you know, you're going to get some no's, and it is a number game. So you just keep asking That's what I create. I know we're not talking about grant writing, but that's why you write all those grants, because you know you're going to get some no's.
Exactly.
So it's a numbers game. That makes total sense to me. I just I have always placed stock in building relationships. Mm-hmm. And the one no that stands out to me is, and I want people to learn, because again, it's about the failures where you learn the most.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very good donor. He was the chair of our capital campaign, gave an individual gift during the annual campaign, supported our events. But I thought, okay, I'm going to take a client with me on this ask. Not a board member. I'm going to take a client. And I made the ask and he said no. And I did have such a good relationship with them that I called and, you know, and said, you know, why did you say no? And he felt manipulated.
Oh.
He felt manipulated that I brought the client with me. And that was a hard lesson to learn.
Wow.
Yes. He was very clear, very clear with me that he felt manipulated. And so learn from those failures and mistakes like I did. Yeah. So if you're going to bring someone outside of a board member, if you're going to bring a client to a meeting, let the donor know. I thought the assumption was that they would never say no in front of a child. They would never, you know, all that. But no, he felt very manipulated. And I learned a great deal from that interaction. So,
and to your point, you know, whether you hear it that way or whether you hear it another way, a no is still sort of a gift, right? Mm-hmm. At its basic level, a no is still at least a learning opportunity. But it also means you don't have to keep spending energy on that level of cultivation. Once you get past no, you can direct those energies in more productive ways.
That's correct.
So
that is correct. Yeah. And then the final part of the pyramid, because we start out pyramid. So let's go.
Yes.
We got the board, we got fundraising, and then the final part of the pyramid is marketing. So you gotta market. And when I say market, it's more like, especially as it relates to the board, I would start off each of my board meetings with mission moments.
Interesting. Okay.
And mission moments was when I had a client or youth in this case come in and they would say, this is why I come here. I come here because after school, you know, I would go home to an empty house, or my mom works or my dad works. And they would tell the board why they came to the program, how old they were. And the board would ask them questions like, what do you like best about it? What don't you like? What do you wish we could improve? And it only took 5 minutes. But that's the part of the marketing, because it allows your board members to retain stories and they become advocates and ambassadors for your organization. So when they're out at the chamber meeting, they will remember a little Mickey story about why he comes to the after school program. And mm-hmm. they will tell that story, as opposed to if you are using your board meetings with a lot of stats and things of that nature. People don't remember stats. We are a storytelling society. And so one of the best ways that I say, just to kick off that marketing to your board, is incorporate mission moments into your board meetings.
That's a fantastic idea. And I think that's something that's not a lot of boards actually do, is to visit an actual real life scenario of what their missions are accomplishing for people. That is genius, Sabrina. Mm-hmm. But my question is, why is marketing the top of the pyramid and not fundraising?
Marketing is a part top of the pyramid and not fundraising is what I have learned over the course of time, is people follow success. And if you are marketing and you're using all forms of marketing, word of mouth, traditional media, print, social media, people gravitate towards success and you're putting your best foot forward. And when you are highlighting what you are doing and you're doing it to the best that you can, people will actually say, how can I support you? I think that nonprofits sometimes get it wrong when they are marketing their organization and they're marketing in a way that says, if it was not for you, then we would not have our doors open. If it was not for, you know, give us money because our lights are going to be turned off. People don't want to invest in failure. They want to invest in success. And so, yes, it is a form of projection, but you have to project that success. And people want to be involved in successful endeavors.
That makes a ton of sense. And you have to be effective in telling your story.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good stuff. All right. So to recap the pyramid, at the bottom of the pyramid is creating the right board foundation, establishing the right relationship with your board members who are strategically aligned with the mission and strategically positioned amongst the community. And then working that board. I'm trying to summarize here. By all means, interrupt me and tell me if I'm wrong. but working with that board to sort of run the fundraising engine, even if they don't want to make the ask, there's so many other things they can do to help queue up that process. Mm-hmm. And then once you have the fundraising engine running, you can focus on the top of the pyramid, which is the marketing aspect of telling the story, sharing your successes, and getting other people to invest in success. How did I do?
You did very well. Very well. And I, you know, some might challenge that pyramid, but I tell you, all I can say is it worked for me. You know, I was able to raise, when I took over my organization, it was at $750,000. Mm-hmm. And I took it to a $2.5 million budget. And we're in the third poorest county in the United States. Mm. And I was able to complete a $12 million capital campaign. So it worked for me. And I like to share it. And you summarized it so very well.
That's very kind of you. But it sounds simple, but again, I'm going to go back to a question I asked in the very beginning of the episode is all these things are things that sound simple. Why don't more nonprofits do them?
I think sometimes it might just be a lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
And I also think sometimes it could just be, you know, it's hard being a CEO of a nonprofit, and mm-hmm. you get very overwhelmed and you don't know what to prioritize and what to focus on. And I think that if you understand that pyramid, then that allows you to say, okay, let me focus on my board. Let me do that. And get that right, and then do the other layers. But I have so many people that are just, it's just so much. I don't know where to start. I don't know what to do. And just focus on that board. If I had to stop and pause over the 25 years of everything, the board made the biggest difference for my organization.
Mm-hmm. So. Fantastic stuff. Sabrina Walker Hernandez, president of Supporting World Hope. How do listeners contact you or learn more about you if they should have any questions?
Well, you know, they say, Mickey, they only do one call to action because people, you know, can only hear one thing. So go to my website,
www.supportingworldhope.com. www.supportingworldhope.com, and everything's there. Fantastic. Sabrina, I have really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for taking the time to be my guest today.
Thank you. I enjoy being here.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.